This is the 5 for 20 Senior Living Podcast from CAC Group. Your host, Peter Winterburn, spent 20 years as a defense litigator for senior living operators and healthcare providers. As a licensed broker and in-house counsel with CAC Specialty, he brings you sharp, focused conversations with industry experts. Each month, he tackles critical healthcare topics, giving you the insights you need without the wasted time. 5 questions, 20 minutes. The clock starts now.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of 5 for 20 Senior Living Podcasts here hosted by the CAC Group. I'm your host, Peter Winterburn, and today we have our special guest, David Thurber, with us. Many of you listening to this call probably know David already or have had experience with David already. David has been an in-house attorney with our group for quite some time. He and I are both in-house counsel here with CAC Group, and so what we aim to do on this podcast is just ask 5 questions in 20 minutes. And so I'm going to ask David 5 questions and we'll have a little bit of dialogue on the senior living industry here. So I just want to begin, first of all, by just asking David this 2-part question. Number one, tell us a little bit about your background. And then part B to that is, what is your current role here in the healthcare practice group at CAC?
Thanks, Peter, for the chance to participate in the call with you today with our customers. So my background has been in the law for the last 35 years as defense counsel, plaintiff's counsel, administrative law judge, et cetera. And my role, my work background principally has been in defense work and in working on contracts and with clients on issues important to them around arbitration issues, mediation issues in the past. And my practice has involved corporations, corporate work, as well as individual work. So I've had a perspective on both labor law from an employment perspective with clients in a corporate setting, company as a client, as well as individuals in defense work as well. So my background is varied, and I think I bring a set of skill sets to the table that reflect that varied background, I guess, that brings me with skill sets to bear on problems that face our senior care clients today. So I think, uniquely positioned to have conversations around professional liability claims, principally, and employment law claims and contract issues with our clients. So that's kind of where my background has been over the years, both in Oregon, Nebraska, and South Dakota, and nationally. So that's my background in a nutshell.
Great. And then as far as your current role in our healthcare group and in our senior living practice group here at CAC, can you just expound on that a little bit more about kind of what your day-to-day looks like with our clients and those that we work with?
Sure. Sure. I really enjoy the work because we get to interact with clients on a daily basis around issues that are going on in our litigation arena from an employment and a professional liability perspective. You and I both are involved in interacting with clients, and we involve ourselves on coverage issues as well as contract and arbitration issues as well. Just a myriad of issues. I think we've earned the right to be heard by our clients on a number of issues as a consultant in their issues that are important to them. And so I come in alongside the client as sort of the hub, if you will, a position to receive their claims, maybe give some perspective on issues that are developing or evolving on a matter, whether it's employment or professional liability. Giving the client some confidence about what's going on and where they might go next, either to enhance their defense position or to actually get the claim filed with the carrier. Then my team files that claim with the carrier. Then we act as an interface with that client, Peter, as you know, between the client and the adjuster and defense counsel. And I think one of the unique things we bring to the table for our clients is we have a sort of what we will call a mini network panel of defense lawyers unique to the space. And we know them well. We've worked with them over the years. They communicate effectively and well with us and our clients, and we bring them to the table right away in the context of filing the claim, making a request for them to be involved in the client, no matter, you know, wherever it may be in the country. And so we then support that process, trying to help the client avoid surprises, make sure counsel gets what they need to get as the case is moving forward, offering perspective both to counsel and the client as the matter unfolds, both on employment and professional liability issues. So we're engaged in problem solving as they come up. Coverage issues develop all the time, and we're involved in looking those over and talking those over with the client bringing coverage counsel to the table if we need to do so, and just become a professional interface with the carrier and the adjuster on their claim activity. You know, clients aren't, this isn't their business, right? Litigation and claims activity, although they have them, their focus is on caring for residents, senior care. And so we come along to offload a little bit of that focus on claim activity and litigation activity where they may not have an expertise or an experience that helps them navigate the course that they have to be on to successfully come out on a claim.
Great. Thank you, David. So we'll move on to question two here. And I know that, you know, your experience prior to, you know, when you were doing litigation and a lot of that had a lot to do with employment claims, and you have an employment background in that regard. The question two, though, is just if you would kind of quickly define for people the difference in a GL, a PL, and an EPL claim. I know those are kind of the three buckets that we operate in and that we, you know, assist our clients with GL cases, PL cases, sure. EPL cases, and then kind of expound on your experience with employment claims.
So the general liability bucket is typically part and parcel of the professional liability policy. The two come hand in hand in the same policy. But the general liability coverage is designed to cover third-party injuries to people that happen on the property of the senior care operator. And so a visitor, a vendor, someone who's not that would not typically come under a professional liability claim is somebody that would be covered by or have defense under the general liability provisions of the policy, generally related to the property of the individual operator. And so we cover those claims. We have general liability counsel that we involve when those claims come up. Maybe a trip and fall in a parking lot, Peter. It may be fall in the hallway, maybe wet, some water in the hallway and they fall. A visitor or a guest or a vendor, or even, sometimes it's a therapist or other professional who's in the building caring for a resident, but they injure themselves on the property when they're there. The professional liability claim is unique and covers injuries to the residents based upon the care that's been provided or not provided, based on a negligent standard, whether that care was provided properly or not. And so the professional liability claim is limited to the resident themselves and the care or lack thereof due to injury or death that may arise from the care being provided to them. The EPLI claim, Employment Practices Liability Policy, is limited also then to the employees of the operator and any claims that come in under the wrongful termination, discharge, discrimination claims, sexual harassment issues, Title VII issues, just a myriad of many, many issues that arise in the employment arena that I'm sure most of our clients are familiar with at this point in time. But it is it's a complex network of laws that are both state and federal. And so the policy comes in to apply to those claims on that side. The EPLI policy typically does not cover wage and hour kind of claims. So we oftentimes are in the middle of a conversation with a client about retaining one of our preferred network counsel in the employment arena to have to tend to those employment issues as they come and go on the wage and hour side of the issue. But we bring the employment defense counsel to the table right away when we get a claim that's significant. And then introduce that lawyer to the client and then help facilitate that conversation and monitor that claim as well. Right. And that employment policy would cover work both in the EEOC, there's a claim pending there, as well as ultimately in court.
Great. So as you know, David, we one of the things that you and I do in our role is we work with our clients to attempt to, you know, reduce claims, obviously, right? And so if we can work proactively on the side of lawsuit prevention, claim prevention, then when an incident arises or something like that, and it does not rise to the level of an actual claim being filed or a complaint being filed in a court, and our clients having to hire outside defense counsel to defend those claims. So along those lines, what would you say are a couple of suggestions, maybe two or three suggestions you would offer to an operator or an owner that wants to pick and on what it is to focus on to have the biggest impact on reducing claims, whether it's GL, PL, or EPL? What would you suggest?
Well, I think, you know, and I know you've talked about this topic before, Peter, in a previous podcast, but it's important to kind of maybe touch on it again. I think at the core, at the bedrock, ground zero, if you will, is the company culture. culture of the community in which the residents and employees are working. Mm-hmm. That culture is going to dictate how that culture is managed. It's going to dictate a lot of things. We happen to believe firmly that how strong and how well the culture is managed is going to be a direct relationship to the kind of litigation you have in employment area, as well as professional liability claims. So if the culture is managed effectively and well, we think you're going to see, and we have seen, frankly, with companies that do manage their company culture well, fewer claims both in both employment and professional liability. So I think firmly that's a place to start. How does the company treat its employees? How do they treat and how the company treats the employees in turn is how they're going to treat the residents and customers of the company, mm-hmm. the elderly residents. So I think I would want to know how they would describe their culture, how they would describe the relationship with employees in the community. Does the ownership and leadership, are they involved in setting clear goals and expectations? Do they walk the talk of those expectations and goals, both mission, vision, and values, how they're stated, how they're carried out day to day in decision making? How do the employees sense that? Do they recognize that in their relationship with the company? Do they feel it? Is the issues come and go? They're mm-hmm. observing all the time, Peter, and they're watching how management deals with issues. And are they consistent or not with mission, vision, and values? And does the employer use the employee? Does he involve them in that process in setting those goals and expectations and vision for the company?
Yeah.
I think for me, those are key issues, and I would want to start there. I think the other piece for me, secondary to managing the culture effectively on those fronts, there's so much more to talk about on the culture front, Peter, but it's sort of elementary as well. You know, one of the key issues we get into all the time in every claim, and for those watching or listening, experience it as well, and that's what does the documentation and the care look like? Mm-hmm. And for me, that goes back to setting expectations with the resident and their family when they come to the table to look at your property. How well do we describe what it is we do? How well do we describe what we don't do? And it's imperative that that conversation occur early on in setting expectations. And the same, and that spills over into wound care, for example. When you set expectations about the environment of a senior care property, especially a SNF, wounds are going to be a part of the environment. And what are those and how do they evolve and develop? And not let the resident or the family, if you will, experience a wound the first time when one occurs, but set the stage for those. How do they occur? We want to watch for them. I think in that process of setting expectations, again, is involving the family and letting you know, letting the company know when they observe things about their family member in the facility. So it's a partnership that's got to be built from day one. And they're critical eyes and ears as well. And we want to hear from them when they see things or observe things and let us know so we can respond to that. I think finally, and we'll talk about it a little bit later, but I think having a good arbitration program isn't a preventative measure, but it's a huge measure in mitigating any claim that comes along in the professional liability arena. And we've got more and more clients also using arbitration agreements in their employment relationships. So they work in both environments, and I think they're important to have on the table.
Yeah.
So another great arrow in the quiver.
Yeah, that's a good primer for our last question. But I want to – question number four real quick is just to kind of throw a real-world example at you or just to talk about how, you know, one of the things that we step in and also assist our clients with now is what should be done in certain situations from the insurance side when something happens. So let's give you the example of, let's say, an incident or an event happens but it's on the watch of a prior management company or operator. And now, you know, the next owner or operator has taken over. What do we do? How do we step in and, provide mm-hmm. assistance and feedback or guidance to a client on an insurance side like that when you're not necessarily sure, you know, how to file the claim or what to do?
Well, as you know, that happens all the time when there's been a transaction where our client is either sold or purchased a property. So the first thing to try to do is separate the issues out and understand the timeline of events and make sure that we understand when the event happened, what policy was in place at that time, whether or not notice was given to the carrier at that time, if it's not our current client, In that process, want to know whether counsel's been involved or whether an adjuster's already been appointed, so we don't file two claims, right?
Right.
And it's imperative we also then begin to sort and sift, did the incident or the kind of issue we're dealing with carry over from one owner to the next owner, for example, across the closing date of the transaction? And that happens on occasion. So now we want to know what our policy looks like and make sure that we've got a retro date on our policy that may go back and pick up a claim that wasn't on our watch, for example. And we also want to talk to the client, frankly, at the beginning before they close on the transaction to make sure they've thoroughly examined the incidents that may have been involved with the seller or themselves, frankly, to make sure any incidents of significance are a part of the contract, of PSA, the purchase and sale agreement, or we call it a continuity of claim filing, which means that if our client's selling the property, we want to make sure all incidents that might give rise to a claim are filed with our current carrier before we sell the property. So we at least have, if those incidents do develop into a claim, we have a foothold, if you will, with our current carrier to file a claim on that policy at that time. So it's a matter of sorting and sifting and looking at the facts and not making an assumption that it's our claim. Often it's not our claim. And we only need to go back sometimes two or three policies to figure out who's on point for the particular claim that's involved. I don't know if that answers your question, Peter.
Yeah, very good. Thank you. All right, question number five. We're kind of rounding the corner here, and you mentioned it earlier in your brief comments about, you know, the difference of these policies and the different kinds of claims that can arise and how to mitigate claims or prevent claims from happening. You talked about arbitration. So just a very 30,000-foot view for folks, what is an arbitration agreement, and can you speak about the importance of arbitration agreements in the senior living context?
Great question. I appreciate the chance to talk about it. So arbitration is an alternative dispute resolution process and method by which we can try to resolve claims with individuals, particularly professional liability claims, outside the court system. So an arbitration agreement is generally part and parcel of the documents that are part of the admission process with any given resident. It should be a separate freestanding document, should be easy to read and simple to read, shouldn't have a lot of legalese in it. The goal here is fairness as well. Courts are going to look at both of those issues. How well is it to understand and how complex is it or not? And did the parties discuss it, and was it part of the transaction at the time of the admission process? So I think arbitration is critical. I think any company without it is missing a significant quiver in their arrow in their quiver, if you will. It helps mitigate the claim. It helps reduce, in my opinion, experience both the value of the claim and the duration of the claim. And so it also keeps the claim out of public eye, typically. And so we don't have to deal with a public courtroom or a public press issue. And that's always worth something in terms of the reputation of the community. I think it's value added to have an arbitration agreement in place. We've seen significant reductions in demands and starting points, if you will, when arbitration's in place. If they're done well, Peter, we can sustain most arbitration agreements in most every state in the country. Courts in the state system, you know, are sometimes working overtime to find a way to defeat an arbitration agreement. But more times than not, if it's done well, effectively, we can sustain those arbitration agreements in the court system. And we want to be able to do that. I think one of the big issues for me to sustain that arbitrability of the process is to make sure that you've explained this document, this arbitration agreement, to the client and the family very well at the beginning and document that very well. If you're a SNF, there are guidelines under CMS regs that provide a step-by-step process that you need to kind of jump through to make sure you've met what they would characterize as fairness in the process. And I think those elements are fairness that apply to any arbitration agreement, whether it's independent living, whether it's assisted living or skilled nursing. And so fairness is communicating to the other party what it is, what it does, that you're waiving a right to a jury trial in the process, which is one of the key issues here, and giving the client and the family time to review it, time to ask questions about it, and time to rescind it if they want to do that as well. So most often the client will sustain the arbitration agreement and will have it in hand and can use it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the client wants to make darn sure they know where the arbitration agreement is. One of the first things we do at CAC when we're dealing with a potential claim is ask the question, is there an arbitration agreement and where is it? Do you have it? You know, too often they get buried in a banker's box in the basement someplace and they're hard to find. So we want to make sure they're early on. We want to make sure we know about them early on so that we can reduce the potential for litigation.
Really good. David, thank you so much for your time. Thank all of you for listening. David, I appreciate you joining us today on our 5 for 20 CAC Senior Living podcast. And until next time, thank you everyone for listening. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Peter.